I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, chapter 21. And this is going to be not a long class, because I have a flight this morning. So normally we go a little longer than I will this morning. Text 17. This is the title of the chapter is Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. And we haven't gotten to that conversation yet. This is now a conversation between Kardama and God. The personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, being pleased with Kardama's perfect devotion and meditation upon the personality of Godhead for 10,000 years in Satyuga, has appeared before him. And the scene is, it's besides it's Satyuga, it's out in a forest by the side of the river Sarasvati. It's complete solitude, and there are three verses that are describing the form of Vishnu standing on the back of Garuda, and his smiling face looking in different directions, pleasing, such a pleasing sight for Kardama to behold. All of his ornaments and his whole features are described. Kardama immediately prostrates himself before the Supreme Lord, and in ecstasy, a love of God, he offers beautiful prayers. We're midway through those prayers. He glorifies the Lord, and we just read he presents a request. His request is that he would like to have a wife of like disposition to his disposition, and to satisfy my lustful desire, I have sought shelter of you lotus feet. So he's speaking of himself in a deprecating way, when in fact his position is, he has a rasa with the personality of Godhead of parental affection. Just like yesterday evening, the discussion about friendship. So there's one sense of friendship on this level, and then on the rasa level. So he's on the rasa level of parental affection towards the Supreme Lord. He wants the Supreme Lord as his son. And it's going to happen. Kapiladev becomes his son. But before that, unlike Lord Brahma, who can produce offspring without a wife, at least Kardama, in this case, is not doing that. He's wishing to have a wife. And he's describing the position of one who has devotion, that, you know, it's familiar to our territory, someone who has devotion to God and has material desire also. He's speaking in that way, at least. So just to say it one more time, he's beyond that position, but he's speaking as if he's one in that position. And it's very edifying because it's appropriate for our position. Some devotion to God, some material desire also. So what do we do with that seemingly contradiction? Here it's laying out not only like teachings, but his example of how he's approaching the Supreme Lord in that mood. And he describes that the Vedas are, as the Lord is fulfilling the desires of everyone, even those who want material things, the Vedas similarly provide the means for satisfying one's desires. He gives the comparison, just like someone may be bound by a rope, and then they're constantly being pulled by the rope of their desires. Go here, go there, fulfill this desire. The tongue, the eye, the touch, the ear. Like bound by ropes. So the codes of the Vedas similarly are meant to elevate, to release one ultimately from the bondage of that desire by submission to the personality of Godhead. Two other little points, just review. He speaks of the Lord. He addresses him as the reservoir of all pleasure, and Krishna, the leader of religion. So by the, one follows the leader, yadyadacharati shrestas, the one who is very qualified and supremely qualified is the Supreme Lord. One follows him, and by following him we follow the path of religion. And the intended purpose of religion is not just fulfillment of desires in a nice way, it's becoming released from those desires. So that's what he's prayed for and spoken so far. Now, text 17. However, persons who have given up stereotype worldly affairs and the beastly followers of these affairs, and who have taken shelter of the umbrella of your lotus feet by drinking the intoxicating nectar of your qualities and activities in discussions with one another, can be freed from the primary necessities of the material body. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. After describing the necessity of married life, Kardama Muni asserts that marriage and other social affairs are stereotyped regulations for persons who are addicted to material sense enjoyment. So there's the unregulated, there's the regulated, and there's the transcendentalists. The principles of animal life, that's the unregulated, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, are actually necessities of the body, but those who engage in transcendental Krishna consciousness, giving up all the stereotyped activities of this material world, are free from social convention. Conditioned souls are under the spell of the material energy or eternal time, past, present, and future. But as soon as one engages in Krishna consciousness, he transcends the limits of past and present and becomes situated in the eternal activities of the soul. We discussed this yesterday. Mam cha yovya vicharina bhakti yugena sevate sa gunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. He wants, by engagement in devotional service, that's the internal potency. Material activity is through the agency of the external potency of God. But devotional service means contact with the internal potency of God. So at once, the modes of nature are transcended. At once, the forces of time, the potential is there, at least the potency is there, to at once transcend the forces of the past and the influences of the future, you know, what's your astrology chart and your palmistry and influences that are acting upon you. The potency is there within devotional service, within the hearing and chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, just like last night, the nine processes of bhakti. Within those nine processes of bhakti, the internal potency is accessed. Or through the agency of them, the internal potency is accessed. Both our statements are correct. Because devotional services, Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Radharani. The practices of bhakti, the connection of with Krishna through devotional service, is an expansion of the Ladini Shakti, the internal potency of the personality of Godhead. So it's the contact is at once. It's just like touching an electric wire that's live. Touching one that's not plugged in doesn't do anything. But touching one that's plugged in, you get a shock. There's no delay. At once. The connection with electricity is immediate. Similarly, connection with devotional service is immediate. So he's now laying out, we discussed at length the regulation of material tendencies, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, or the urges of the body. The codes of the Vedas are to regulate them, and then the purpose of those regulations is not just authorized sense enjoyment, it's to elevate the soul beyond those tendencies, beyond the urges and the pushings of the modes of nature, minimally towards the platform of goodness, but actually to transcendence, because the source of those codes of regulation is the transcendent. So by submitting to them, one contacts the transcendent. One contacts the supreme pure. Now he's saying, so there's another means besides that means, and that's the transcendental means. Not relying on the regulation of these tendencies, which one may say are social conventions, at least the social conventions for religious-minded people. Injunctions of the Vedas, you know, like proper conduct, worldly affairs, how to conduct worldly affairs in a virtuous manner. Just to say it again, in that acceptance of the codes of the Vedas, there's submission to the personality of Godhead, because that's the essence. It's not the behavior, it's the submission. To the degree that submission predominates, one becomes more elevated. To the degree that it's just codes, then you're obedient. You're not law-breaking. You're not punished by the hard laws of nature for violating laws, just like the state. You know, someone can abide by the law, and someone can be very devoted to their country. I don't break the law. I don't get put in jail. I don't get any fines. I don't get disturbed by the police are friendly to me. And then there's someone that's very devoted to, the source of where the laws come from. One has to act in terms of the Vedic injunctions in order to enjoy material life. But those who have taken to the devotional service of the Lord are not afraid of the regulations of this material world. Such devotees do not care for the conventions of material activities, ; they boldly take to the shelter, which is like an umbrella against the sun of repeated birth and death. That was from yesterday evening also, that little sound vibration, the fire. The fire of repeated birth and death, the conditional life. It's not only this life, you know, complain a little bit about, you know, it's tough sometimes. But it's not just like this life. You're in that territory, and it's life after life. It's the blazing fire of material existence, using the metaphor. And what can extinguish the blazing fire, blazing forest fire? Fire brigades can't do it. Buckets of water can't do it. A torrential downpour of rain from the clouds. Remember from yesterday. So as the rain can extinguish a forest fire, Krishna and the rain cloud are friends. Krishna can extinguish the blazing fire of material existence. And connection with him similarly, looking at it from the other perspective. So Karma Muni, he's vastly learned. He's very elevated, very pure, saintly person, extremely qualified. Earlier verses described him as a Mahayogi, and really hear some of the things that this Mahayogi does with his yogic power. Phew. But his attention is to the personality of Godhead. So it's he's giving us a look at regulating material desire, transcending material desire. Regulating material desire, there must be regard for the personality of Godhead, otherwise why will I follow the regulations? Meaning, I may follow regulations when I'm feeling the pinch of material existence, and I go, ouch, and so I sit straight. And then after things get a little comfortable again, it's complacency. That may happen in our devotional service also, aside from followers of the rituals of Karmakanda, portion of the Vedas. Submission, when there's, you know, some difficulty is coming your way, Krishna, and then there's more intense attention that goes to Krishna. Things are going on very nicely, and may be less attentive. Tendency is like that. When the motivation is for my material well-being and material comfort, if I'm comfortable. Prabhupada spoke like that about America. He said this country was founded on religious freedom. People left Europe to come here to practice their faith in God. And many churches were built, and after some time, by the grace of God, they prospered. And then the churches emptied out. And then the Hare Krishna movement came and bought up many of the churches. Many of the places that initially were Hare Krishna temples. I mean, not initially, but when we started buying things, it was empty churches. With the long list, the Montreal temple, the Toronto temple, the New York temple, the Houston temple, the Dallas temple, the LA temple, not Detroit though. Fisher Mansion. That's another story. But because no one was going. People were prospering. You go to God when you want to prosper, but you're prospering. See you later. Thanks a lot, Krishna. Tendency. Not all in all circumstances, but there's a tendency. If the initial purpose or motivation is material elevation or relief of distress, Krishna indicates like that in Bhagavad Gita. Chatur vidhava jante mam jana sukritanorjana. Those who are sukriti, those who are pious people, there are four categories of pious people who engage in my worship or my service. And those who want relief of distress, those who want economic betterment, those who are curious, those who want knowledge. And when you get those four things, then what? See you later, Krishna. Thanks a lot. Tendency, not always. So the not always part is when there's the step that says there's a higher purpose besides this one. That's the transcendental path. The Bhagavatam is comparing, contrasting. It's a, those that know a little bit about education, there's a method of education. Compare, contrast. It's like how they give IQ tests. If you study the questions in IQ tests, that's what they're doing. Where are the points of similarity? Where are the points of difference? And it takes intelligence to see where's the similarity and where's their difference. That's what they do. They're testing your intelligence capacity. What's the same? What's different? And that's discernment. Intelligence is the faculty of discernment, to distinguish this from that. That's what intelligence is, material intelligence. Spiritual is the difference between matter and spirit, and the controller of both. But that's just material, that's spiritual intelligence. And then what do you do once you have the fruit of spiritual intelligence? Krishna says what you do. You serve him. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam. Thus knowing, you serve him. Bhajante mam. Because he is that, through the study of scripture, or through the revelation of revealed scripture, here's the source of everything. And Krishna is disclosing, I'm the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Thus knowing, they surrender, engage in my devotional service. So he's doing this compare-contrast thing also. Second paragraph and we're done. Constant transmigration of the soul from one body to another is the cause of suffering in material existence. The conditional life in material existence is called samsara. Boys, do you know what the word samsara means? Samsara means? No, no. Samsara means?
Birth.
Yeah, repetition of birth and death. Samsara. You know, the wheel of birth and death. Boom, 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 boom. That's samsara. Boom, 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 boom. Then just keep doing it again and again. Like a Ferris wheel. You know what a Ferris wheel is, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 okay. Okay. Constant transmigration. Oh, we did that. This conditional life in material existence is called samsara. One may perform good work and take his birth in a very nice material condition, but the process under which birth and death take place is like a terrible fire. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his prayer to the spiritual master, has described samsara, or the repetition of birth and death, is compared to a forest fire. A forest fire takes place automatically without anyone's endeavor by the friction of dried wood. And no fire department or sympathetic person can extinguish it. We quoted this yesterday evening, remember? The raging forest fire can be extinguished only when there's a constant downpour of water from a cloud. The cloud is compared to the mercy of the spiritual master, by the grace of the spiritual master. The cloud of the mercy of the personality of Godhead is brought in, and then only when the rains of Krishna consciousness fall Can the fire of material existence be extinguished? This is also explained here. In order to find freedom from the stereotyped conditional life of material existence, one has to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, not in the manner in which the impersonalists indulge, but in the in devotional service, chanting and hearing of the activities of the Lord. Only then can one be freed from the actions and reactions of material existence. It is recommended here that one should give up the conditional life of this material world and the association of so-called civilized human beings who are simply following in a polished way the same stereotype principles of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. Chanting and hearing of the glories of the Lord is described here as Tvad Guna Vada Sidhu. Only by drinking the nectar of chanting and hearing the pastimes of the Lord can one forget the intoxication of material existence. In the one of the earlier classes I gave during this visit, I made the comparison of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. One way that Prabhupada has described this is undergraduate and graduate study. You know, something that we're familiar with is undergraduate and graduate study. So what you learn in undergraduate doesn't change in graduate. You know, like 2 plus 2 is 4, and in graduate it's 2 plus 2 is 4. But how you apply and then can understand application of 2 plus 2 is 4 becomes far more sophisticated. But principles don't change. So that's one way of comparing. Bhagavad Gita is undergraduate, it's principles. And then in Bhagavatam it's the graduate study, how the principles are applied. Then another way of comparing, we're doing the compare and contrast thing right now. So another way of comparing is Bhagavad Gita is teaching principles, and then Bhagavatam is, it's a Purana, Bhagavat Purana. It's a historical narrative, real events, not fiction, real events that illustrate the principle, so you can see how the principle is applied. So like, for example, we could talk about there's descriptions of the duties of a householder or an ideal householder, and then you meet one. Wow, that's like, okay, there's the principle embodied in a walking example of what the book says. And that's what it looks like. And it's a lot easier to understand it when you see an example. Yes? That's a very easy thing to understand. Or brahmachari, or sannyasi. Here's what a sannyasi is. And it's, you know, the textbook. Same like Prabhupada would give this example. Jnana and vijnana, knowledge and applied knowledge. There's chemistry in the chemistry book. Then you go to the laboratory and you mix this with that and you make something. So that's the application of the principle. The Bhagavatam is like that. But it's Bhagavat Purana. In every verse, the goal is, the message is, look at the bigger picture of what the Bhagavatam is doing, every single verse is leading one to Bhagavan. It's glorification of Bhagavan. And therefore, what's being described in the purport to elucidate what Kardama Muni is saying to Lord Vishnu is the path that takes one beyond the regulation of my material desires so that I can do my material thing in a nice way, in a pious way, and prosper in this life and go to the heavenly region in the next life. The Bhagavad Dharma principle is directly hearing the glories of the personality of Godhead, which this verse and other verses are doing, in the entire Bhagavatam, and thus elevate one to the principle of transcendence. Beyond, you know, the struggle. Transcendence. Like the verse of Bhagavad Gita. Daivihyesha guna mayi mama maya duratya yaya yaya yaya. Very difficult struggle. Mamevi papadyante mayametam tarantite. One can easily cross beyond it by surrender to Krishna. And the surrender is awakened, the desire to surrender. We come into this material world because of another kind of spirit, a dvesha spirit, an attitude of adversity to the Supreme Lord. But that is quieted, the fire of that is quieted by the downpour of mercy, the rain of the messages of the personality of Godhead. So even the rebellious person can become pacified and elevated and transcend that viciousness of material existence and the struggle itself. And so early in the Bhagavatam, the recommendation is that the hearing of these topics should be done regularly. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. One should hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and serve the persons, the Bhagavat personalities, regularly. So here we are, Saturday morning. I was amazed to see so many people because the program last night was late. And I left early. You stayed and took prasadam. And you're still here. So congratulations. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So the blazing fire of material existence, the struggle with seeking happiness in the place where there's no happiness. It seems there's something there. It's something that keeps those who are not taking shelter of the Supreme Lord to continue on that program. There's something there. But that something is so paltry. And literally, it's illusory. It's now you see it, now you don't. It's gone. Illusory happiness. Chapala Sukha. This is a very nice section. As I said yesterday, so now there's a larger audience. This section of the Bhagavatam is very valuable for someone who's not a pure devotee yet. And that's all of us. So, but there's some inclination, and there's some tendencies or entanglements or, you know, stuff that's going on this plane, and we'd like to. So how do you do it? How do you go to the next level? Nicely, gradually, not like abruptly and rashly and impulsively and in some way that. It's not sustainable. So how do you do it? The personality of Kardama is illustrating, and how he speaks, what he speaks, the whole thing. It's very, very valuable instruction for one who's in household life, especially. Okay, I'm gonna end here. See if there's some discussion. Yes? I have one request. Can each of you, rather than begin with the preamble of thank you for the class, like just going into the future, I guess it's part of it's a nice thing to say. It's just like a little redundant. I'll say it this way. We never said that to Prabhupada. Thank you for such a nice class. I appreciate the message, but it strikes me as, it's not just you, it's many people say that. Go ahead.
You pointed out in the Nityam Bhagavatam Sevaya.
Yeah.
We have been hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures from devotees. However, the effect is not so much as we hear about that. That should have happened. So, why is it so that when we hear so many times, still the effect doesn't show up? Or is it, like, why is it so gradual? And what can we do to...
The gradual is due to our material attachment. You remember from yesterday? How long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Less than a moment. And in that less than a moment, two things. The tendency to speculate, to try to understand higher truths, has to be abandoned. In other words, receive knowledge in a descending fashion instead. And the tendency for sense gratification. So instead, direct the senses to the service of the master of the senses instead. Because we're attached to those two things, it's gradual. Or another way of saying the same thing is the wedding party example story, Bhaktisiddhanta. In Vrindavan, every year, Bhaktisiddhanta used to take his disciples on a parikrama throughout the whole of Vrindavan for the whole month, just like Lokanath Maharaj does, and others also participate in that. The whole month. Not just like, you know, a short one, but a whole month. And in the evening, there was some discourse. So in one of the discourses, someone asked the question you just asked. They asked it in this way. Two people apparently doing the same thing, the same way, the same enthusiasm. One advances, the other doesn't advance. How come? And then he told the story of the wedding party. You know the story? Yes, you do. Once upon a time, there was a wedding. And the members of the bride's family were going to get in a boat to go downstream to the groom's parents, the young man's parents and family and the whole, you know, caboodle, were going to get in a boat and go downstream to the bride's place. And the next morning, the wedding. So they get in the boat, oh, happy day, tomorrow is going to be the wedding, and, you know, joy and mirth. And they get in the boat and tell the boatman where to go, and they take rest. And they get up in the morning, oh, the sun has risen, now the wedding is going to begin, and they look around and they're in the same place. And they get really upset with the boatman. Boatman, you've cheated us. We paid you the proper fare, and we haven't gone anywhere, and now we're going to miss the wedding. He said, no, I was rowing all night, I don't know what happened. And they look, and he left the anchor in. That's the end of the story. We keep the anchor in, and even we're doing good things, it's not going to have the same full effect. There's some benefit for sure, but one has to let go of tendencies for sense gratification, maybe some particular ones, and then we maintain our favorite ones. And then it's still slow. Doesn't have to be. The potency is there to carry one to Krishna at once. Sagunam samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. At once. But if we hang on to stuff like tendencies, the enjoying spirit, the independent rebellious spirit, to enjoy independently from Krishna, then we didn't get the message properly. And it's going to be a slower kind of progress. Something else? Yes?
I have this question on the application of this verses about, what was described about knowing the ideal situation on the highest goal, and then he's also aware of where he is, or at least
okay.
Expressing in that way. Now, my question was like, when we are ignorant of the highest goal, it's like ignorance is bliss, and one can go on doing whatever they like. But when one is aware of the highest goal and then to accept where we are and what position we are in, kind of brings a sense of guilt. And how to really deal with that guilt or that kind of heaviness that comes, that accepting where we are and then also keeping the highest goal in focus.
Okay. Just a little editing in your question. Ignorance isn't bliss. Ignorance is the root of suffering. Prabhupada says that over and over. The root cause of suffering is ignorance. And in a deluded state, in a covered by Maya state, ignorance is bliss. But it's the cause. In ignorance, I do so many things. One may do so many things that actually the cause of my suffering. So now, but your real, the essence of your question is the guilt question. How to avoid that? Knowing I'm here, the goal is there. Why am I so lowly that I'm so far from the goal? Even when I know what the goal is. And I have the means to achieve the goal, and I think I'm trying, but I'm not getting anywhere, and not happening. And a big part of that, I discussed it to some extent in earlier classes, but a big part of that is letting go of doership, changing the paradigm from doership to devotion. Doership is, I'm going to do it. I'm here. The goal is there. Here I go. Wait a minute. Here I go. It's not going anywhere. Because the model is the wrong model. That's the material model of acting through false ego. Specifically, look it up, Bhagavad Gita 3:27. Acting through false ego, one thinks, kartaham. So what if we don't have that model, what's the model? And we've discussed, we do service. And Krishna is the deliverer. He gives results, not me. Not my work creates results. He specifically says in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, never think like that. That Nakartritram Nakarmani Lokasya Srijate Prabhu. Never think that you're the cause of action. Never think that you are the cause of the results of action. And never think that you are inducing others to act, which we always think. Rather, understand that all this is being carried out by material nature. So what's my role if it's all being carried out by material nature? Our role is the servant. And Krishna is the master who we serve. So that's the different paradigm. It's a nice paradigm. It's the real one. It's who we really are. It connect with reality. And then you just serve. I'm here. Krishna's there. Just like, you know, in a family. Your daughter's little. And she, you know, your mommy. So, you know, she doesn't know how to do everything, and that's okay with you. You're her mom, and you're like, you know, you're holding her hand, and you're helping her through every step of life. Krishna's like that too. We just like, you know, reach out and hold his hand, and he'll help us. However little we are, it's okay. Krishna doesn't mind. We just follow. As best we can. Sometimes we make some boo-boos. But, you know, Krishna's fine. He's you know, he'll correct us. Chipram bhavati dharmatma. He'll correct the situation. He's very loving. So it's different than the doership mentality. It's the dependent upon Krishna and serving him. And it's nice. They don't have to be, you know. Think how Krishna thinks. Will Krishna accept me? I'm so imperfect. I'm so fragile. I have so many shortcomings. Krishna, will you accept me? Big smile. Like your daughter saying, Mommy, will you accept me? No question. He says a big hug. Like that. Krishna is very loving. Something? Anyone? Okay, you let me off easy. Yes.
I was just thinking about the rasa between Kapil Bhur and Kapil Muni. You said Vasta Vihas, yes. So I was just thinking about comparing and contrasting Mother Yashoda and Krishna.
Wow.
I was just thinking, like, the difference, at least I see, is Mother Yashoda. They don't see Krishna as a supreme personality. Or at least the internal potency comes.
That's certainly a difference between Mother Yashoda and Kardama Muni, yes.
So that's what my question was, like, if he knew that he was supreme personality that was going to be born, like, how did that become considered as... How did that become... like a I'm thinking it can be anything, but it may be like an awe and reverence.
No. You want to know since Mother Yashoda does not think of Krishna as the personality of Godhead, how is it parental affection? Because he's not thinking of the Supreme Lord, as Krishna as the Supreme Lord, so how is it anything different than a mother's love for a child that doesn't think either child is the Supreme Lord? The difference is, he is the Supreme Lord. And she has affection for him. And he is the Supreme Lord. But her affection, here's the clue. Her affection is so strong. She's so up there in motherhood that even Krishna is exhibiting his divinity. Her affection is so strong, she can't see it. Her madhurya eclipses his aishwarya. The sweetness of her love is so strong. That's Mother Yashoda. But it's parental affection. It's vatsalya, it's parental affection. Love of the mother towards the child. So strong, she doesn't even see his divinity. That's how Queen Kunti appreciates Mother Yashoda. She has parental, she has Vatsalya Rasa also. And she sees, if you study her prayers, they're very beautiful. She sees, she has difficulty. She sees Krishna as super soul walking amongst us. What kind of vision is that? Kunti's up there. There's a Lord in everyone's heart, and he's appeared before us. What was initially problematic for her is that Krishna comes and touches her feet and treats her like his mother. And he's the personality of God. He's super soul. So she's comfortable seeing his super soul. She's uncomfortable that he offers her respect as a mother. But beyond that, it's just inconceivable that Krishna, seeing a little stick in Mother Yashoda's hands, he starts to cry in fear of that little stick in Mother Yashoda's hand. He, who is feared by fear personified, he's God. Fear personified is afraid of him, and he's afraid of a little stick in Mother Yashoda's hands. He starts to cry. And it's not like pretending. Oh, I'm supposed to cry now, so they pretend to cry. He's feeling fear. With a little stick, and mother, so she throws the stick away. She doesn't want her son to cry. but she wants to like discipline him because when he grows up, and if he goes, he's a thief. He grows up. We got a problem. It's my motherly duty to discipline him. So that bewilders Mother Jasoda, or whether Queen Kunti, even more. So, but it's parental affection. Vatsalya means parental affection towards the personality of Godhead. She has parental affection. She just doesn't see him as God, but he is. And her love is so strong that Krishna is afraid, and he cries. There's a nice pastime when the elders in Vrindavan, they see Krishna is exhibiting his Aishwarya, and they're wondering, who is this child? So they request Nanda Maharaj to call a village elder meeting to discuss who is Krishna. And some of them put forward the idea, maybe he's a great demigod. Maybe he's a great yogi. And some say, maybe he's the personality of Godhead. And Nanda Maharaj laughs and laughs and laughs and laughs. Said this little boy. He hears thunder. And he comes running. Mother Jasoda, Mother Jasoda, Nanda Maharaj. Crying and crying. And he gives different examples of Krishna's pastimes where he's just behaving like a little boy, a little bewildered boy. He's not the personality of Godhead. The personality of God, like this, he's calling, Kardama is calling, addressing Lord Vishnu as the abode of religion. This little boy, we have so much butter in our storerooms. He has to go to other storerooms and steal butter. And then when we catch him, he starts crying. He's God. He just laughs and laughs. And he laughs so hard, everyone starts laughing and laughing, and they forget the whole question.
I guess the premise of the question was, is it possible to have rasa while knowing that he's God?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Devahuti and Kardama Muni. Just this example. When Kardama Muni leaves, and because now Kapila Dev is old enough to look after Devahuti by Vedic standard, she's sitting before Kapila Dev addressing him as the personality of Godhead. She's not unclear. She's perfectly clear. Or Queen Kunti. She's perfectly clear. Can one have parental affection, Vatsalya Rasa, knowing that he's a personality of Godhead? Yes. Yes. It's not the same as Vaikuntha, and it's not the same as Vrindavan. It's these other realms where it's like, this is a Brahma Samhita topic. But in the description, the beginning part of Brahma Samhita, there's a lotus, the center of which is a whirl, where Radha and Krishna are. And the petals are the abodes of the gopis, and they're assisting Radha and Krishna in their pastimes. And then there's a rectangular region outside of that central region, like the corolla, the petals, and then there's an exterior region. It's not like the suburbs either. It's part of Goloka. And in this realm is where there's different Mathura and Dwarka. The area is called Swetadweep. Where it's still Vishuddha Sattva rules. There's no modes of nature. It's pure goodness. But there are other features other than this central feature, Radha and Krishna and the gopis and, you know, Vrindavan. There's the other regions that are part of Goloka. Then it's not, they're lesser. It makes that, Rishi Brahma Samhita describes, it makes the whole thing complete. And that's a whole thing we'll, we can do another time. So there are these other feelings towards Krishna, though they know he's the personality. When Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, he said, I've appeared in this form so that you don't think of me just as your child, but you understand I'm the personality of Godhead, because you desired a son like the personality of Godhead, and there's nobody like me. I'm one of a kind. So I appeared this way to fulfill your desire. To have a son like me means to have me. Here I am. I'm your son. But because they have parental affection, Mother Devaki prays to four-armed Vasudeva Krishna to assume a childlike form. She has parental affection. It's not for that reason. She gives another reason. Her reason is, when Kamsa comes to know that you've appeared in the prison house, the eighth son of Devaki has been born, he'll come here and try to kill you. So if you're a little child, maybe we can hide you somewhere. But he's Vishnu. Who can harm him? It's very unreasonable. But it's very devotional. It's her parental affection. Please assume a childlike form. Okay. So it's not completely Vaikuntha mood. It's this in between position. It's the Sweta Dweep place. Part of the spiritual world. Something? Okay, I'm going to end because I have to go. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.